what fewer people know is that Edgar's spirit of exploration extended well beyond space travel to his lifelong dedication to our increasing our scientific understanding of the nature of consciousness. Space exploration symbolized for Mitchell what it did for his nature, a technological triumph of historic proportions, an unprecedented demonstration of scientific achievement, and extraordinary potential for new discoveries. What Mitchell did not anticipate was a return trip that triggered something even more powerful. As he gazed at Earth floating in the vastness of space and contemplated the history and hopes of humankind on that lonely blue sphere, he was engulfed by a profound sense of universal connectedness. There it is.
Ta-da!
And then I realized that the story of ourselves as told by science, our cosmology, our religion was incomplete and likely flawed. I recognized that the Newtonian idea of separate, independent, discrete things in the universe wasn't a fully accurate description. What was needed was a new story of who we are and what we are capable of becoming. That moment was an epiphany for Mitchell. As an accomplished scientist and engineer, he had grown accustomed to directing his attention to the objective world out there. But the experience that came to him while hurtling through space was profound. My understanding of distinct separateness and relative independence of movement of those cosmic bodies was shattered. I was overwhelmed with the sensation of physically and mentally extending out into the cosmos. Ooh. The restraints and boundaries of flesh and bone fell away. I wondered if Stu and Alan, companion astronauts, were experiencing them as well. Somehow, I never felt the urge to ask.
Wow.
The experience led him to a startling hypothesis. Perhaps reality is more complex, subtle, and inexorably mysterious than conventional science had led him to believe. Perhaps a dwelling of consciousness could lead to a new and expanded view of reality in which objective and subjective, outer and inner, are understood as complementary aspects of the miracle, he says, the mystery of being.
That's great, Ross.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. That's great. So, I love it.
Many
love
paths
it.
To discovering oneness.
And you know, he had a literal shift in perception. Literal, got on a spaceship and left the planet.
Yeah.
And looked back at the ball that he called home. Couldn't see any of the people. He was so far away, but he recognized he was one of them down there on that ball, thinking that was home. And here he was, not on it. Not different from when you have your meditations. If you've ever had a meditation where you just became so simple that you didn't immediately fit right back into your body, you know what I mean? You're just so still and so simple, and you've got a sense of beingness that just doesn't have anything to do with your body. This is him not having anything to do with Earth. In fact, he knew he may never go back to Earth. He may not be able to get back to Earth.
Early astronauts, it was pretty big question.
Got a little dicey there on 16, yeah.
13. 50-50.
50-50.
Yeah. Each of the Apollo,
Sign, you sign up to that.
Yes, you do.
But I'll tell you, the same thing, similar thing happens. The shift in perception occurs for me, and I think for all of you, when you get very still, when you get to your simplest moments, and a sense of love and a sense of being and a sense of existence washes over you that seems to be independent of what's happening with your body. In fact, it's in defiance of your body. If you happen to be in any kind of pain or any other situation that's pressing on you and you step out of it in your meditation, you know what I'm talking about. You cannot go back now to being fully a victim ever again, can you? Not really.
Changes you forever.
Reason will tell you. We just finished a whole section on reason. Reason will tell you that if ever you have actually had a holy instant where you were free of your body. The Course says these can happen and you don't recognize that it did happen. That's why it asks you to take a moment to, it doesn't say celebrate, but I'm going to say celebrate your freedom. Because just like the waves behind the wake, behind the boat will wash over the traces that the boat passed through the water. And within a few moments and a few yards, there's no evidence the boat was even there. But during the time that the boat is breaking the water, during the time you are meditating and you are feeling a sense of spaciousness, a sense of freedom, a sense of eternity, when you get to those stillness moments of your meditation, they are moments, unless you go to these extreme extents where you can really stretch them out. But when you get there, even if you come out of it, and of course you do, it's a really good time to appreciate the freedom and the simpleness and the spaciousness and the proximity to eternity that you may have experienced. In other words, let the holy instant be known. Be known, owned, and known by you. The ego is like the water behind the boat. It's much, much bigger and vaster at this level than the holy instant. Ego owns time. It will wash away the wake of the boat. And pretty soon, the randomness of the water, there will be no trace whatsoever that you even meditated at all. In evidence, you'll be on your feet again. You'll probably drive off somewhere. And then a day and a week will pass. And like the boat, there's no evidence that you actually got still, ostensibly. But if you take a moment and you appeal to your Holy Spirit and just say something like, thank you, it completes the circle of acceptance. A little atonement has occurred as you completed the circle with your thank you. You can do it any time. You can remember a time back 3 years ago in Tibet when you had this moment. I don't care when it was, because time's irrelevant here. But you know that you had a stillness and maybe tears came. One of those times when it was just so beautifully simple, your existence, that you cried. That means you couldn't, your body couldn't contain this being, this joy. This is the true sense of you coming through, the holy instant. You can be grateful for that at any time. I recommend you do. They will continue to come, but it's not necessary. Only one of those is necessary. It is necessary, though, by the way. Fine print, right? Fine print. It's like the alcoholic or the heroin addict who would like to not be addicted and not have to spend all this money and not hang out with these horrible people and not be a drug addict. It is necessary one thing only. They stop taking the drug. If even only to know that they are choosing the drug, they're not a victim. You are on the same journey with your ego. You must courageously make this choice to be without your ego for one instant entirely. This is the veil the Course talks about. This is the gap the Course talks about. This is the salvation the Course talks about. Nobody and nothing, including God, has the power to come and put you into the peace I'm talking about. Not while you're busy being at war with yourself and the world. There's nothing has the power to do that. It says it right in the book. It says if somehow you were forced into peace, then you will be deprived of your very nature, your very being as a creator, as an extension of God. You cannot be forced to do anything. that would be against your being. So that's kind of bad news, isn't it? Nothing can save you. You must save yourself. The good news is that you can save yourself. And when you do, like it says in chapter 18, it always comes the same recognition. Oh, the key was do nothing. That was the key to my freedom. Not get all elaborate and figure it out and then suddenly, pop. That's not what happens. You may do a lot of these moments and sitting in a cave and navel staring and trying to perfect your spiritual practice, but always, the Course says it, and I think it's been the experience of anybody who's done it, when you actually get to simplicity, it is an undoing. It's a moment of simplicity that you realize, wow, what I actually did for that glorious few moments of the holy instant was to successfully do nothing with my ego, with my separate sense of self. And I discovered this vast instant, eternal connectedness. I can never go back. So, I love this idea of the astronaut going out there and having a shift in perception, a shift in perspective of standing on the moon and looking back at the Earth and saying, oh, now I see everything is connected. I am separated from what I thought I was out here on the moon. The Earth is floating. It was always floating. I thought I was standing on terra firma and all the rest of the universe was chaotic, but at least the Earth wasn't moving. But standing out there on the moon and looking back at the Earth and realizing that thing is spinning. You're spinning right now. Right now, as you sit in your chair, you're moving over 1,000 miles an hour in your chair. Do you know that? Earth is 24,000 miles around, takes one day to go around. So therefore, 1,000 miles an hour in your chair. And then, you know, it takes 365 days for the Earth to spin its way all the way around the sun. All the way around the sun. It's such a long distance that the Earth is moving 60,000 miles an hour to make its way around the sun in 1 year. Did you know that? 60,000 miles an hour. That's, let's see, 20, almost 30 times faster than a bullet. Whew. Are you moving right now through space? So he got up there and he had a shift in perception. That's what's happened to me in my studying of science and biology and stuff. I just continued to have more and more shifts in perception the closer I got to nature, like this. I'm not turning the right way. This flower isn't really here for me. I'm just pretending to look at it like I do on the TV. But looking into the details of how all that happens, in the detail of it, it's just bigger and bigger. You look smaller, but it gets bigger. And it just helped in my spiritual awakening and process to let go of differences. Tim.
As I thought about it, you're traveling 1,000 miles an hour if you're standing at the equator. Mm-hmm. If you're at one of the poles, you can subtract that whole 1,000 miles away from the, what did you say, 65,000 miles an hour traveling around the sun to make 1 year?
60, yeah.
Oh, 60? Okay, so you got the 60 all the time. It can be 70 if you're at the equator or just 60 if you're not.
See, so Tim's a real scientist, and that's what it's like talking to a real scientist. Just, you just got to get to the facts.
The guy sounds like a geek. That's what the real
thing is. The guy sounds like a geek. I'm making a subtle point here. He's like going for, let's chalk this up.
Right. Yeah, sorry for derailing the train.
You know why there's gravity, right?
Tell me, please.
Because the Earth sucks.
Yeah.
Scientific answer.
Bang. Okay, so tonight, in A Course in Miracles, we've come to, finally, it's taken us 21 chapters to get to this couple sentences. This is a place that now that we've all been here, we'll return to much more easily in the future. This is a couple of sentences in this book that really calls you to appreciate a higher motivation for your spiritual awakening. Okay, so there's only two motivations. One is to feel good. That's pretty innocent. A lot of people come into a spiritual practice because something's wrong. They feel bad. Or they feel confused even. But they just feel bad and they don't want to feel bad. They want to feel good. They'll be happier. That's good. It's a great, of course, place to start, and this will get you there. But then it kind of falls short. Then they abandon. Once you start to feel good and your problems start to go away, you abandon your spiritual path and you go back to getting happier and happier in a personal way. And it turns out to be a selfish way. We know about this ego thing. But it works at that level. So spirituality can be used as a way to avoid some of the traps when the ego gets to be too much. This other motivation that is introduced tonight in this reading, a couple of sentences we're going to look at, a higher motivation, a motivation that actually works to carry you all the way through your spiritual awakening. It's very important. You know, side note, for those of you who studied this for years and years and years and sat with the sanghas and everything, you know, people go up and they say, I got it and I lost it. You've heard this? Maybe it's happened to you. You actually abided for a while in peace and a sense of belonging and purpose and all that, and then you lost it. Something happened in your life or just wore off and you felt very unhinged again and you... Or you were trying to, this happens to Course in Miracles students, you're trying to teach somebody else the Course. And your own foundation of your Course in Miracles begins to loosen because you can't explain it. You try to use these words to explain what forgiveness is and miracle, and you realize you don't really have a hand. And they start punching holes through it. And they start quoting bigger authors and famous people, and you're lost, and you start to doubt. You're an accomplishment. It happens a lot. But there's this other motivation that will carry you even through that for your own spiritual path. And it is this. Do you want to know what you have actively denied? Because what you've been denying is the truth. Regardless of the outcome. Do you see? Other way was, it better make me happy. If I'm going to meditate, if I'm going to light these candles, if I'm going to follow this guru, it better work. If I'm going to go travel to India, it better make me happy. It better smooth out my relationships. Or I want a refund. And it's so interesting that if your motivation is happiness and on the spiritual path, you will come across people that you really, really adore, that you think have done it, gurus and fellow students who have studied so much, and yet they're still angry. They exhibit behaviors that you think are unbecoming of a saint. And that can throw you off your path because you were focused on happiness. You're focused on a better living. It's innocent enough, and I think you should definitely start with that because what else? How else could you be reached? How else could you be reached to do anything other than More money, more health, better friends, better job, healthy, wealthier, and wise, and happier. What could motivate you to get away from going after the material means to get happy? Since the world's paved and the advertisements go on 24/7 to help you, if you've got the money or the time, you may buy happiness. At least you can try. Mm-hmm. At least with money, they may not buy happiness, they say, but it does definitely pay off misery. You really can't buy off misery. You may not be able to get to happiness, but you can cut the loss. What a trap. What a trap. So tonight I want you to be thinking about something. This is another motivation for your spiritual path. And it is not happiness. You have to transcend this goal of happiness because you don't know what happiness is at this next level that you awaken to. You cannot know. The Course says in chapter 14, this is a quote, "You who are steadfastly devoted to misery, must first realize that you are miserable." Jesus knows that you're running after the pot of gold, that you're running after the lesser happiness, which is really just a relief of pain. It's really stopping things from going wrong that you don't want to go wrong. In other words, chapter 16, the ego knows only what it does not want. It knows for sure what it does not want, the ego. A very limited way to approach moving forward is by avoiding what you don't want. It doesn't actually have a positive goal. It's just an amazing psychological insight given us in chapter 16. Okay, so this certainly innocent enough to just want more happiness in your life and have the pain go away. Have the pain go away. The doubt, the guilt, the anger, the depression, you bet. Good enough. And the Course in Miracles, by God, it will actually do that. But that's not enough for your spiritual awakening. That's enough for miracles. It's enough to get you to see things differently so that you have a chance not to be miserable. But it is not enough. Miracles are not enough. The book says it. A miracle's not enough. You have to follow the miracle with forgiveness. Forgiveness is a verb. The act of undoing of the thinking that keeps rehearsing the darkness. It keeps making you feel lonely or guilty or angry or weak or vulnerable. These are thoughts that are habits like the cocaine or the heroin user. They just go to their drug for their happiness. You go into the ego for your happiness. You have to stop doing that. And sometimes it's kind of ugly. So there's work involved. But when you do that, as everybody here has done an act of forgiveness. You've had a shift in perception at some level, and then you caught your negative thinking and said, I don't even need to do that anymore. You laughed it off and you felt better. And you said, I'm doing more of that. I'm gonna do the workbook lessons again this year because, man, I can't wait to get the benefit the workbook lessons gave me last year or 3 years ago. You all know this. Now I want to introduce to you the higher motivation for your spiritual awakening. If you haven't already realized this, we'll be reading about tonight that will carry you through what otherwise could be really uncomfortable hours in your life when this spiritual path gets difficult. It'll carry you through what you may have learned to be called the dark night of the soul. You see, the dark night of the soul is not depressing. It's not depression. Depression is depression. Anger is depression. Loss is depression. It's not the dark night of the soul. Not at all. The dark night of the soul is when at once you come to this understanding that what you've been doing with your body and your mind and time and the ways of the world is not true. It can never get you to the peace that and the love that you crave. So you finally somehow come to the realization that I'm not going to find it in the world. I'm not going to find it by doing more world stuff. There is no piece of music that's going to deliver me even. There is no poem that's going to suddenly wrap it up and get me there. There is no person who's going to orate and then guide me and take me to my nirvana. There's nothing in the world that has the power to do that. You get there. And yet there is this drive in you that recognizes the love is true. See? You know that you're going, but now you no longer know how to get there. And you know it's not the world. You got more books to read and you got to stop reading them because you think it's, you know somehow it won't be in any of these books. Do you see how limited the books are suddenly? It's beautiful. All
right. Andrew, there is a sharp distinction to be noted here between the fact that all sentient beings, like that gray cat that Deborah has auditing the course and hoping to come back something a little higher. But I mean, I've done experiments in labs where even planaria, you know, 108 cells scurry down a little T, and if they go right, they get an electric shock. If they go to the left, they get a nice, cozy, warm nutrient bath. Once they learn to make the left, they always do. So that's an example of a relatively low-level consciousness choosing to be well as opposed to be in suffering. You could say that about the cat. You know, it wants a sense of well-being versus a sense of suffering. I, on the other hand, and you and everybody in this group and anybody on the planet Earth who has a strong interest in it, we can have the ability to say, I do want to be happy instead of suffering. However, I have the ability with the Holy Spirit's help to recognize the answer isn't found on the Earth. Doing the same old, okay? That's a startling difference.
Startling.
It's the only difference that has any hope in it for us.
That has any hope. Nicely done. That's right. The hope gets washed out from all the promises that the world can seem to deliver. Okay. That's right. The hope changes. Very good, Tim. Something in the human... Something in your mind and your consciousness loses hope in the world. Very good.
Thank you for that affirmation of the idea.
Absolutely.
It's never occurred before inside of this rock.
This is the dark part, see, of the dark night of the soul. Because you had hope before that healthier, wealthier, wiser, luckier, better friends,
more famous,
more famous, right. would deliver you the happiness that you sought. Yeah. And you've now lost your hope in that. Now, careful here. It's not depressing. It's not, if it's depressing, you're just depressed. You still actually have your faith in the world. That's what depression is. It's a sense of loss. And when this realization comes and that this hope that Tim has described comes naturally and truly, there's a sense of optimism because you're no longer lying to yourself. Do you see? Do you see? You're putting down the drug. It's a little scary because the drug is where you got your happiness before. But you don't believe in that happiness anymore. Do you see? There's a sense of freedom there. A sense of honesty is arriving. Even though you don't know where you're going to go, how you're going to get there, you think it's something called God or spirit, but you can't see either one of those. And so you get a little lost. But it's not depressing, you see?
Barbara.
Barbara.
I just want to affirm that. In my experience, it's what I'm going through right now is that weird feeling of not wanting anything. There's nothing I want. There, you know, and that's disorienting.
Disorienting.
Because I've lived my life wanting things.
Naturally.
And it is freedom.
Yes.
But it's, and really, I mean, it's like, it's what you're describing. You lose interest in books. I mean, looking in books for, you know, except for this book. Mm-hmm. And this book continues to feed me on a daily basis, those holy instants. Yeah. On a daily basis.
It's amazing. Yeah.
And it's weird.
It's weird. It is weird. Really?
It's weird.
It is weird. The power of this consistency of this book is weird.
It is.
Uncommon in any book I've ever found.
And I really am feeling like the only thing that I really want is this same sense of peace. And my lesson for today is 185, I want the peace of God.
Nice.
And I'm really feeling it. And can I just read the very last part of that lesson?
Please do.
Because it's what I'm finding that I want is that I want everyone to have the sense of peace. So I'm going to read it. So the very last part is, it is this one intent we seek today, uniting our desires with the need of every heart, the call of every mind, the hope that lies beyond despair, the love attack would hide, the brotherhood that hate has sought to sever, but which still remains as God created it. With help like this beside us, can we fail today as we request the peace of God be given us?
Mm.
And that to me was just so beautiful because it talks about every heart and every mind, you know, and that it extends. If you have the experience, you want it to extend to others. I just want to also say that is in the context of, I got a phone call last night that said that my 39-year-old son accidentally shot through his leg and severed the tibia and fibula.
Hmm.
And he's in Natividad Hospital in the trauma. He's had surgery. I haven't spoken to him, but I still feel this peace, that everything is okay, that there's nothing for me to fix. There's only for me to, and I have a troubled relationship with him, is to extend an offer of any kind of help that I can give.
The knee does not change.
The what?
The knee. The connect. His leg connected to his knee and his foot, and whatever damage comes out of this gunshot wound does not change one iota his presence.
No, it doesn't. And
where it is.
Right. And that it's like the, you know, this.
Let me take that a step further before you continue.
Go ahead.
For those of you who have lost loved ones, even animals, and you felt that threshold, that pain in your heart as their physical existence was changed. Did you notice that it did not change where that loved one exists for you? It's very important. It's very important you recognize that it wasn't the body. It wasn't the body. Please continue.
Well, it's just to me about the peace. You know, it's that deep sense of peace that keeps you from being rattled by,
yeah,
you know, it's like
perspective has changed, right?
Terribly concerned.
The mother yeah. Or the son.
Yeah. I am terribly concerned, but not in a rattled way, not in a frantic.
Yes.
You know,
this is very dicey different. Words to use here. And I know you're within a group that understands it. So you're free to discuss this, but I have tried to explain this with these terms. I say you are carefree, but you are not careless. Just as a way to kind of approach it, see? Another much bigger term is you have achieved a divine indifference.
Right.
Like the guy standing on the moon, looking back at the earth and saying, he sees the whole earth at once, spinning through space. Ross.
So my new word is inconsequential.
Mm.
So it's not that I don't care. It's not that it doesn't matter. It's that it's inconsequential in a true spiritual sense.
If you step back one layer, it's probably enough to make it inconsequential.
Yeah,
I love it.
And there's that lesson. I'm sorry.
I did have one. So it's not that I don't care. It's not that it doesn't matter. And I also wanted to say that I know that people who followed Adyashante, when they went through their dark night of the soul, they were going to psychologists and they were trying to figure out what was wrong.
I know it.
So, anyone who's studying A Course in Miracles, oh, boy, are you lucky, because I went through the dark night of the soul under Adyashante's teaching, and he just pulls your whole foundation of your house out from under you, pulls the rug out from under you and says, well, something else will replace what you just lost.
Yeah.
Wait for it.
Yeah.
That's how he used to approach it. When I was going through, you probably know what I'm talking about, Andrew.
I do.
That's how he approached it. And it was like, oh, I wonder when that thing's going to come in to replace all these worldly. It was bad for a long time.
He would actually say, abide in that. And I think that was very confusing to a lot of people.
How fun was that?
Exactly.
A long time.
It's kind of hopeless, you know, if you...
It's just like, I don't even want to open my mail. You know, it gets that
yeah.
bad. You're just like, I don't care. Oh, I guess there's a bill. Eventually I'll have to open that. But everything else, yeah.
But if you've been crawling along your Course in Miracles over the years... Something has occurred to you, an awareness has occurred to you that there is love. There is something that actually has the power to make like this flower back here, even in the dream.
That's what I said, is that people who follow A Course in Miracles, even if they do go through a dark night of the soul, they can read ahead and see, oh, that's what is coming.
Yep.
They don't have to sit there and go, I don't know what it is, and I'm waiting for it.
That's well said, Ross. You can look ahead. Look at the table of contents and look at the promises and say, I don't get it, but man, they're there. I will get it.
CIM, man, it's rough. I'll tell you firsthand, it was rough.
Yep.
Can I just say that the lesson in the course to me that summarizes and gives me comfort is I will step back and let him lead the way. It really is like you can just step back and let him lead the way.
Lesson 155. You bet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very powerful. Wonderful, wonderful lesson of a pronouncement of the healed mind, of the freed mind. Let's just read the first paragraph, first two paragraphs of lesson 155 since Barbara brought it up, because this really does fit right into our discussion. Turn into the workbook, and it's going to be
91.
Say it again, 291?
Yes.
291. This is a beautiful couple of paragraphs here. Yeah. Yeah, this is... we'll just, this is really perfect. Yeah. I don't want to get too distracted with what this lesson brings also. But let's read a few of these paragraphs because it really is just right. Tim, would you start for us? 291. Oh, Albert's back. Albert's on the top of my screen. Albert, would you unmute yourself and go to 291 in your workbook?
Okay. Lesson 155.
You got it.
We'll step back and lead God, let God lead the way. There is a way of living in the world that is not here, although it seems to be. You do not change appearance through your smile, though you smile more frequently. Your forehead is serene. Your eyes are quiet. And the ones who walk the world as you do recognize their own. Yet those who have not yet perceived the way will recognize you also and believe that you are like them as you were before.
Did you get that last few sentences?
No.
When you're among those who are like you, who are other course students, who are in your Sangha, if you're a Buddhist, you're like all, you're nodding the head and saying, yes, I am the light of the world. So are you. There is love. Teach only love, for that is what you are. Oh, thank you. You give a big hug, right? And I'm free. And then you'll turn the corner to somebody who is not studying spirituality, has not found a light within. And they'll see you as one of those egotistical know-it-all people who are studying the spiritual stuff. Bible thumper, they'll call you. Why don't you get a real job, they'll say. Why don't you get real and see how selfish you really are? And they will see you that way, naturally, just as you were before. From their perspective, that's exactly, you're just like them. But when you're around other course students and the other people who have actually found the light within and see it elsewhere, you're at peace with a whole new perspective. Tim, would you read for us paragraph 2? Wait, let me unmute you there, Tim. Sorry about that. Go ahead, start again.
I'm sorry for missing that too. The world is an illusion. Those who choose to come to it are seeking for a place where they can be illusions and avoid their own reality. Yet when they find their own reality is even here, then they step back and let it lead the way. What other choice is really theirs to make? To let illusions walk ahead of truth is madness. But to let illusions sink behind the truth and let the truth stand forth as what it is merely sanity.
Aha! Thank you, Barbara Crumb. Because this is exactly what's occurring in your awakening. The world is not good enough. It used to be. I came here to be separate, but then I found that this light was here too. The love that you are began to call you home, and you've made a place where that love could be denied. It's called the world and time and space, but the love that you are is calling you home. And you start to recognize the weakness of the illusion, the promises it can never deliver on, because now you've woken back to love.
I really admire Jesus and or Buddha or the Christ for teaching successfully one of the most difficult ideas that there is for the human being to understand, to get. This is hard stuff to understand. At least I can speak that way for myself, for my truth.
Yep.
Others may get it. Snip, snap. Hey, you know what? Great from them. And that wasn't my path. My path has been to come on this idea and just really go, huh? You know, like that. Like, it took me a while to get out of my ivory tower mentality and begin to think, this might be true. You know, and then read it and read it again and look for more evidence to support it from all different traditions, like Ross was saying earlier. And that's been the struggle, really.
I just want to point out that struggle that you went through, everybody's gone through that to some degree or still going through that, was an abandoning of the old way, and then a faith had occurred in a new way that was not yet known. An abandoning of the old way that seemed the certain or the only way, and a faith in a new way of thinking. When at once you tried the new way, you say, I don't know if it's going to work, but I'm going to try it. I'm going to try meditating. I'm going to try thinking bigger thoughts. I'm going to try some compassionate meditations and being and sharing with other people from their sense of being rather than their sense of doing or owning. Some of these shifting, miracle-inducing thoughts somehow, some way, tripped across your path. And if I may speak for you, see if this fits at all, a new emotion was born. There's the old emotion that is of the ego, and that is give to get.
Yeah.
A new emotion was born when you took on true compassion, true sharing of others' being. When you saw the sameness rather than the differences, a new emotion was born. And it was to have peace.
Right.
Teach peace.
So the compassion idea was one of the toughest. The second one, and the other one was the idea of the holy instant and the things that it brings to me and to all people who follow that journey to the end over and over and over again. You know?
Jesus described it this way. Jesus said it's a peace, okay? It's a peace that passeth understanding, meaning you can't logically understand this kind of peace, and yet you know it. This is what happens to you. Yes, Barbara?
Luann, you had your hand up before.
Okay, just a minute. Somebody
else. Okay, where is? Can I say something?
Yes, please.
Hi, Luann. Yeah, I just wanted to say that you know, that ego really, really fights back, because there's a place where, you know, you're going, you have to have faith. And I think, and faith means that you just have to believe that, you know, you're in the right path, even wow. though, you know, you may not be enveloped with love or loving thoughts or anything.
Very good.
And, you know, so you just have to, faith means not knowing.
Bingo.
The ego hates that.
Tell us.
The ego hates that because the ego wants to think that you're really important and that you know everything. And enlightenment is a really, really humbling experience. And so it's not that you're going to feel, you know, that you're one with God all the time, but you're going to have the faith. And the faith means that you don't know anything, but you still believe.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well said. Well said, Cecilia.
And that's why the ego hates.
And this is the darkness.
We'll fight you back. It'll fight you.
You bet it wants to go back to its drug. Mm-hmm. But you're abandoning the ego.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're letting go of what you now know is weak. The promises of the ego are seen as weak. They do not fulfill this light that is somehow, some way born in you. And this is why the faith is required. Because you do know the ego, but you don't know your freedom and how to get there and how to keep it. You don't even know the source. And if you spend a little while and you study things like what's behind this freaking flower here, you really know you don't know. You really know that you don't know. I mean, in detail. And it's easier, I think, to abandon thinking you got it. You, the ego. You, the linear analyzing thinker. And yet, the beauty is overwhelming. Or the peace that comes in a meditation. The peace comes from having just one holy instant. Is subtly and beautifully overwhelming from any promise that the ego linear mind could ever have. But that's the darkness, see? As I love that Tim pointed out, the hope goes away. That's the darkness. You were counting on the hope of being able to do your magic in the world better and better, still better. Maybe even get lucky and then get happy. But that's gone. This is the darkness. This is the darkness that occurs. But I tell you that it's not depressing because it's actually in alignment with honesty. You're arriving at the ability to walk through the veil that seemed so thick and impossible before. But now you know you must go through it. This is the faith Cecilia was talking about. You do not know what it's like to abide in perfect peace and truth. You do not know what it's like to have perfect compassion or Christ's vision all the time. But you do know that is where you're going. This is traveling through the dark night of the soul. It is not depressing. It is dark because you've lost your hope. Yes, Barbara.
But the Course, and this is what I was saying last week, it's a systematic undoing. The atonement is an undoing, and the Course does it very subtly and systematically when you enter the lessons. That's what I'm finding, that it goes from stopping struggling with the ideas that are presented and entering through what Cecilia was talking about, faith. I mean, I know how my ego failed consistently. In my relationships in particular. And I tried everything under the friggin' sun. And I failed and I failed and I failed. So it's really with the sense of failure that, and not for lack of trying. I mean, I really tried and I failed. And so this whole process of undoing and having faith in the undoing, it's experiential. It's not cerebral. It's not finally understanding the idea. It's allowing myself to enter wholeheartedly.
Wholeheartedly is another great term.
Yeah.
And that comes with the new emotion that gets born in you on your spiritual path. You get a wholeheartedness that occurs to you once you accept the sameness of all things, for example, that your ego always was looking for differences so that it could navigate. The wholeheartedness sees the sameness, and it is beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. So a new emotion is born that will drive you and pull you, because this now is starting to put together what the ego was taking apart your whole life. Wholehearted is a great term. This new emotion is born in you through your spiritual practice that allows you to see holistically. Things start to come together. Even though they still appear different to your eyes, in your heart is born a new emotion. This is what the Holy Spirit works with. This is what your Holy Spirit works with. And this will pull you through the dark night of the soul as it begins to birth in you the awareness that you've been seeking. Luann.
I don't believe I've ever had a dark night of the soul, because when Ajashanti was talking to me about it one time, I was asking him, and what does that mean, and what does that mean, and what does that mean? And he said, there's no answer to that. And I said, okay, well, I feel like there is an answer to that, and I'll have to find it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was going to say was, what I have found is, for my intellectual self, I have finally figured out that I can't figure out anything. And so what has come to me is, the only road that I know I have now is to just open myself up to new pieces that come. They come. I don't have to ask for them. I don't have to look for them. They're just there every day. Something new comes along.
It's waiting for you.
And it's waiting for me.
This is, you know, another way to say that is on page 660. Can we finish this? Yeah, I think we can drop this page now. Thank you, Barbara. It is such a beautiful lesson. I'd love to spend a whole night on that. Because it's just one of the most beautiful things. But another night. Turn to page 660. We'll follow up on another way that you make the surrender from the world and the addiction to your ego. And this is what it looks like. It's, of course, end of the text, right? 660 in the text is chapter 31. There ain't much left. In fact, he's setting up for the workbook. He says, you know, we're going to have to abandon all this theology stuff and go to some practical lessons to help you clear your addicted mind. But he says, you know, this is what it looks like. Look at, let's see what we do on time. Okay, we got to speed up a little bit here. So look at, on the top of the page, start with sentence 4, where it says, where key 4 words, concepts of the self. Concepts of the self have been laid by. That's our focus. Jacqueline, I got your mute. Would you read for us, starting with paragraph 4 on page 660, top of the page, and read through the rest of the paragraph, please?
Okay. Where concepts of the self have been laid by, is truth revealed exactly as it is. When every concept has been raised to doubt and question and been recognized as made on no assumptions that would stand the light, then is the truth left free to enter in its sanctuary, clean and free of guilt.
Initially, you don't miss the point. We're talking about abandoning the self, the concept of self. Well, that would be everything you've hoped to make work.
That's exactly what I was saying.
Yes.
It's like when I do something that's from this world and it doesn't work, I say, well, of course it didn't work. That wasn't me in the first place.
So you give up.
I just give up thinking that anything going on is wrong because it's just something I did or something somebody else did or whatever, but it's not me.
Yes, and there's a gift waiting for you if you would just put down your judgment and your anger, even as things appear to go wrong. There's the ability to hear what's right if you let your Holy Spirit speak. So you let go of the selfish agenda in those moments. Concepts of self must be laid by and not holding any value. That's what it's like to abandon the material linear world. And yet there's more. Jacqueline, please continue.
One of my first ways of doing it is saying my mind isn't smart enough to figure this out.
Well, that's a good admission. Yeah. Jacqueline's going to read for us Jesus' version of that.
Okay.
There is no statement that the world is more afraid to hear than this. I do not know the thing I am, and therefore do not know what I am doing, where I am, or how to look upon the world or on myself.
Record scratch, fear for the ego. Problem, you don't know squat. Well, what? What are we talking about? Well, I don't know what I am. And therefore, because I don't know what I am, therefore, I do not know what I'm doing in this relationship, in this job, in this pursuit of whatever it is. Where I am, so says the man on the moon, looking back at what was his home just a few hours ago. His home is larger now.
A mistake feels what feels like, well, this isn't going right. I just laugh at myself.
That's a good, yeah, well, you're getting a clue there. The shift in perception is often very funny.
Yep.
And I'll bet you that Mitchell, looking back at the earth, to think that you're limited to the earth now that he's not even standing on it, that's the only reality. It's laughable. Laughable! I'm on another planet. Hello, don't convince me that earth is the only place you can exist in any way. Don't know where I am or how to look upon the world or on myself. That's pretty emptying. Emptying. Okay, Jacqueline. Now hit us with that. Hit us with the conclusion Jesus hands to us.
Yet in this learning is salvation born, and what you are will tell you of itself.
Yo. This is what it's like to traverse the shore, to leave one shore of certainty that's really not so certain after all. And then to go dark with the dark night of the soul and travel through the desert on faith. Just keep going. Something tells you, just keep going. The faith of Cecilia, just keep going. A little light has been born. I call it a new emotion, talking to Tim, that will drive you and carry you across this emptiness. And when you get quiet enough to that, you're sure that you've left the ego behind, even for a moment, then what Jacqueline just read, in this learning is salvation born. And capital W, what? Not who. Who is dead, right? Who is gone? You don't have a name. This body fixation had a name. Nobody actually has a name. This is part of your awakening. So it's now what?
When I make a mistake is what I say as well. Whatever that was, it's not me.
It's no longer who. It's what? Just subtlety that can mean everything or nothing, depending how you're looking. What you are will tell you of capital I now, itself, because you've opened the door, because you've laid yourself open and available. You've made room. Yes. Sundari.
It doesn't mean I don't want to be peaceful in this world.
Well, you also won't deny yourself peace along the way, because if you ignore your body and you let it go shivering cold or too hungry, then the dimension that you've invested in will call you back and will deprive you of your ability to open your third eye. It will just, until you get very advanced, the body will still have too much power. It's not necessary to deprive yourself of comfort. That's a myth. You will be surprised though on how little comfort you need. It's amazing, but it's no need to make yourself uncomfortable. No, certainly not, Luann. Yes, Sundari.
Well, and the other part about it is I don't think that it happens unless you ask for it. And so, I mean, like I went through this whole thing you're talking about. I was on the way back from Egypt and said, hineni, hineni, hineni. I was in England all alone, and which means in Hebrew, here I am ready. And I said, whatever you need to do to maximize my service to this planet, do it. And I said, if you never want me to see my husband again and my children again, I'll take this case. I'll go wherever you want, whenever you want, as long as you make it perfectly clear to me that it's you. And within 1 year, my husband died in 6 hours, nothing wrong with him. Four months later, my daughter was 81 days hospitalized, hanging between life and death. I left my job, my lifetime career, long lifetime career. I left my spiritual base and I left my music base. And I was in free fall for about 3 years. I mean, it was just like, you know, really smushed out identity. But what I got then was really clear voice of Holy Spirit, really clear through signs and synchronicities and hearing and seeing. And I know I'm supposed to go there now. I'm supposed to go, you know, where I started at that point feeling lived rather than living. But it was certainly a dark night of the soul. And for various reasons, everything feels right about it. Even my husband was much older than I and would not have been happy other than going like that. you know, it was quite a journey.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that because, you know, everybody is, it will not be the same for anybody. We're all unique leaves on the tree, and so you need not compare. But by God, notice the path as you make, and then own this new emotion if it gets born in you. If you've had this, you know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't, you're going to. This awareness just pops up, and it will carry you through what otherwise would seem dark. It's a new type of hope. It's just bigger and further. It's just more real. It's truth. And that's what our focus is tonight. Do you want to see what you've denied actively because it is the truth? So let's go to Deborah. And Deborah, have you read already?
No.
Okay. Deborah, would you read for us paragraph 5, starting on page 462? The bottom of the page is the very last line of that page.
Okay, page 462, and you said paragraph 5.
Yeah, bottom of the page.
Yet hate must have a target. There can be no faith in sin without an enemy.
Let's just stop on that first sentence. Do you mind if I interrupt you as we go along? Because we're running a little short on time. And there's so much at the end of this paragraph. It's all we're going to talk about. So we're not going to see this again for the rest of our lifetimes, actually. If I look at how fast we're going through this book, we're not going to see this sentence again. So let's look at it for a second. Hate must have a target.
Oh, yeah.
It works with a target, and it's because of the target that it exists. Love does not have a target. Love is not victorious. Love does not have a goal to achieve. Love is. Love is tapping into a universal nature. Hate is specific.
And it separates.
And it's separate. Keeps separation going. Please acknowledge that. It's just a great way to flip the coin and see how far you're going from hate as you go toward love. Please continue, Deborah.
There can be no faith in sin without an enemy. Who that believes in sin would dare believe he has no enemy? Could he admit that no one made him powerless? Reason would surely bid him seek no longer what is not there to find. Yet first he must be willing to perceive a world where it is not. It is not necessary that he understand how he came, how he can see it. It is not necessary that he understand how he can see it.
How you might even say how he can see it. And you could put quotes over the sea to help understand what Jesus, emphasis Jesus is putting here. It's not necessary that he can understand how he can see it. Mm-hmm.
Nor should he try.
Now that's a little harder. Please continue.
For if he focuses on what he cannot understand, he will but emphasize his helplessness and let sin tell him that his enemy must be himself. But let him only ask himself these questions, which he must decide to have it done for him. Do I desire a world I rule instead of one that rules me?
Okay, answer, Barbara. I mean, Deborah. Do I desire a world I rule instead of a world that rules me?
Yes, yes.
Okay, Cecilia's jumping right. Yes.
There are a couple of layers here, right?
Well, that's fine. Let's think through them then. Peel those layers.
Do I desire a world I rule instead of one that rules me? So do I desire a world that ego rules instead of the divine spirit ruling me?
These aren't capitalized. You are already in a world and you're completely addicted to it.
Right.
If you had your druthers, would you like to be a victim or not?
Well, not.
Not. I'm going with not myself. Everybody else with us on that? Okay, good. All right, good. So we like the first one. We don't want to be doormats. Good. Deborah, next one.
Do I desire a world where I am powerful instead of helpless?
Honestly, what's your answer?
Yes.
Yep. If that's the choice I have, I'm going with yes. Pretty for sure. Okay, yeah. Let's do the next one.
Do I desire a world in which I have no enemies and cannot sin? Well, that's a no-brainer.
That's a no-brainer. Really, yes. No two ways about it. All right, so far we're really aligned here.
And do I want to see what I denied because it is the truth? Yes.
So this is what we've been studying to be able to answer this one honestly for the past couple of weeks. This is a higher calling to your spiritual path, to your studying. This devotion to truth rather than happiness will carry you through the confusion that may follow on your spiritual path, where the ego keeps seeking and seeking and not finding. This new emotion that gets born, this love of the truth, this love of the truth. Like I say, when you get inside of what's going on in this flower, it's so beautiful. And then you find out that it's the exact same thing going inside of my own hand. Oh, there is a universal truth and I want more of it. And it's beautiful and giving, constantly giving. Even in difficult circumstances, it's giving. The tree gives shade to the sinner and the saint alike because it doesn't know the difference. That's beautiful in a way, isn't it? Good night, Tim. Thanks for joining us. Really helpful.
Yeah, Andrew, I was just thinking that, you know, the foundation for all this needs to be where you're at peace. right? Because once you are at peace, then, you know, then do I desire a world like rule instead of one that rules me? Well, if you are at peace, then of course.
People will vote for you? Is that what you're saying?
In other words, it's not from the ego. You have to be at a place of peace, right?
Yeah. You see, even from the ego, even the ego wants to be in charge. The answer is yes to all three of these questions.
Yes, I want a world I rule, I the ego.
You bet, honestly. Well, the ego gets shut down on number four. Read number four, Cecilia.
Right, and do I want to see what I denied because it is the truth?
Look at the first half of that sentence. Do I want to see what I have denied?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Look at page. Hold your finger here in case we have time to come back. We probably won't. But hold your. Go all the way to the front of your book again and see where Jesus starts talking about this denial. He didn't drop it. He didn't forget it. This is a constant theme in your awakening. Look at page 218. 218 in the text. And let's see where he first brings this up that I can remember. And look at paragraph 1. Under the way to remember God. A section title like that's got quite the promise to it, but check it out. Look at sentence four. Sentence five, please. The task. Do you see it? The task of the miracle worker. That's you. You're a mind changer. You're studying and training and behaving to change your mind from suffering to healing and then to peace. That's what you're doing. And from peace begins your awakening. You did not awaken because you stopped suffering, folks. You know that, right? Suffering can just, I had it, I lost it, and suffering comes back. Talk about sitting with Adya. Is Ross still here? Yeah. That's one of the reasons I stopped sitting with Adya. He's such a big job. People kept showing up to him and saying, oh, I got it. I got it. I really, truly had it. Oh, and then I lost it. And they just be couched carefully and treated. So I thought, oh, a lot of people not getting any traction, didn't know where to go next. And it's, but of course, anyway, I digress. So look at sentence five. The task of the miracle worker thus becomes, you are now told what it is you will do for your freedom. Now, there's still another 1,000 pages to go to help you get there, but he just tells you, and it's this, to deny the denial of truth. Double negative, typical Course in Miracles, slows you down, makes you think about it.
And I said about Ajahn Shanti, one of the times he was talking, he said, I was studying under this person for a long time, and I realized, and everybody there was older than I was, and he said, and I realized they weren't getting anywhere.
Yes.
And I thought, what you're saying, it sounds like, you know, you could stay with Ajahn Shanti forever, and you wouldn't get anywhere.
And Ajahn Shanti himself left a previous teacher because he looked around and he said, these people have been here twice as long as me and I don't see that they're getting anywhere. And he left.
Yeah.
He gets it. He gets it. He truly gets it. It's just such a hard thing to teach. That's why I'm handing it over to Jesus, who actually wrote it down and put it in a book for me. I can follow. God bless Adya, but really Jesus came. This Jesus character has written it down for us in a pretty tidy book. It amazes me sometimes. Look how much time we spend on a single paragraph, and this book is only 1,300 pages? Wow. Holy cannoli. But the task of your job now, your job as a miracle worker, is to deny the denial of truth. And you recognize, it talks in here also, what is denial? Denial is this mental process where you do not follow what you believe, right? To deny something means you have to know about it. To deny it means you know about it in some way, and you're just not going with it. You're denying it, right? So he's calling you out. He knows that you know. You don't know that you know the truth. But the truth is in you. The truth has created you. And you are extending the truth in your being. You cannot leave the truth. You're just pretending to. You're denying the truth. Now you must deny that denial. That means undo. So that's what we're doing, folks. And that's our orientation. And I hope that you all recognize that a new emotion is born in you that is given of the Holy Spirit. It's part of your inheritance of being love yourself. You're calling yourself home. It's a new emotion compared to everything the ego has ever offered. This will carry you through any dark night of the soul. Thank you for studying Course in Miracles with me. Let's do it again next week.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you, everybody, for your sincere involvement and questions and showing up for this and bringing in your personal experience and your reflections on this. It really, really helps teach everybody and me too. Thanks again.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night,
everybody.
Thank you, everybody.